Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Our careers to date have been as marketers first, but today, both of us find ourselves in positions of also being founders and leaders of our own companies. With this experience in mind, we wanted to explore what it means to build a marketing-first organization and the implications of this for how we grow our businesses. I'm Joe Glover, founder of The Marketing Meetup, global community that connects and educates over 20,000 marketers in the most lovely way possible. Everything we do it to put the human beings we help first.
I'm Richard Wood. I lead the marketing agency Six and Flow. I've worked in marketing for around 19 years now, and I'm a massive believer in that marketers should be trying to engage with people on a human level, not just treating them as leads and numbers in a spreadsheet. Maybe it's because I'm a marketer, but for me, marketing has always felt like the main driver in growth. Don't get me wrong, without sales and without great products or customer service, growth is going to be limited, but marketing has always felt like the real driver. But growing a business, it's not all about marketing. So how do we balance being a founder and a marketer? And should marketers really be founders? Have Joe and I chosen the wrong path?
You decide.
God, Joe, I'm throwing this one to you first. So how do you feel about, so you've built a business based around bringing a community of marketers, and you were a marketer, and I don't think you could have positioned it as being much more of a marketing first entity. Like, how do you feel all this fits together?
Well, I think it's interesting. So I think the biggest thing to say about my experience as a marketer is probably in how I've gone about targeting folks. So in fact, you sort of said it in your question there. I couldn't have built it more around a bunch of marketers than what I did, really. You know, it's called the Marketing Meetup. The events are about marketing. We speak about marketing, you know, highlight examples of that. It is truly an organization for marketers. And I think that probably is the biggest part of what we've done that sort of represents the marketing view on the world. It's based around a certain set of people, a certain set of problems, and an experience which they've all experienced at some point in their time, whether it's through education or the need for connection. So I would say that's probably been the biggest part of the Marketing Meetup growth in terms of how we've approached it as a business and as a marketer. It always felt quite natural, I guess. You know, I didn't actually start the Marketing Meetup with that sort of like super tight focus in mind or anything like that. It was always just like a solution to a problem. But I think over the course of time, it's probably had a broader set of implications than I was even aware of at the moment. So yeah, that's probably the first thing I'd say. I was actually solving a problem when I started off, and then I became more of a marketer over the course of time with the business. I probably never really approached it as a marketer first time around. How about you? How would you sort of say that your journey sort of started in sort of building Six and Flow out?
So I like the fact that you said you started off with like solving a problem, because the problem I initially set out to solve is I didn't enjoy my job. I didn't enjoy the role I was in. I felt like we were building an agency not in the image of how I wanted an agency or thought you could get the best out of an agency. So we were selling to the wrong type of clients, and we had high team churn, high client churn, and it just wasn't an environment that I was enjoying. So it was about the same time that my first child was due. So I did the smart thing and quit my job, and I was just going to go into consultancy. And like the problem that I was solving for that was for me, like I wanted to be working in an environment that I felt empowered in and also was enjoying the work again, because I love marketing, but I just wasn't enjoying what I was doing. Mm-hmm. And then that one client who was a guy that I, my first client, who was a guy I used to play rugby with, he was then like, well, you're telling us what to do. Can't you just do it for us as well? And then it kind of spiraled into an agency. And then it very quickly became the problem I wanted to solve was I wanted to create an agency that if I didn't own it, I'd want to work for it. And that became like the blueprint of like the early stages of the agency. Yeah. And like we still have that now, but it's now become a kind of, okay, we've created that. Now we have to maintain it while we grow it. So it kind of, it shifts the goalposts, but you kind of get the idea. Now for me, like because I was a marketer and am a marketer for all my sins, it's like I've always approached it in, I guess, almost like the image or perception of who we are as an agency. So like the early days, I was obsessed with, okay, how do we make ourselves look bigger than we are? How do we attract the bigger clients? How do we share that internal vision, that team vision, so that we can hire the right people? And I think that's one of the things that we did well, particularly the early stages, is we market ourselves for the team members. We had a sense of excitement. People wanted to be involved with like this plucky upstart that was kind of ruffling feathers. Like that was a kind of mentality that we have and like had and still have. So we're starting, one of my goals for this year is and kind of following years is to maintain that challenger brand ethos while even if we become the incumbent. And that's kind of one of my goals. And it all, for me, that all folds back into marketing and positioning. So I think I've kind of leveled out being a founder. I never really think about myself being a founder. Like it's not something I associate with, but I've leveled out being a marketer and a founder because I think marketing, particularly in the stuff that we do, people want to work with a marketing agency that can do marketing. And if you can market yourself effectively, it's kind of like the proof is in the pudding. They want what you're doing. And that's kind of how we've done it. And as we've grown, it kind of changes the way that marketing then fits into that bubble.
Yeah. So that's really interesting because you mentioned never really fitting into that founder title and stuff like that. And I think I've always found a lot more comfort in the title of a founder than I have in the comfort of like a CEO. And the reason why I found that interesting was because you also said about marketing Six and Flow at the initial stages is almost being bigger than what you were. So like, was that an advantageous thing at the beginning of you know, the Six and Flow journey? And would you do it again if you had your time again? Would you sort of look to build up that sort of we're bigger than we are impression? And therefore, I guess the second half of the question for me is like, when it comes to titles and stuff like that, do you identify as a CEO now, or do you identify as a marketer?
So I guess that title, that being bigger than we are, like not in terms of like we're not hoodwinking people, but you want to give people confidence. So we were a new agency. We didn't have any client case studies that we can rely on. We had to give people confidence that they were making the right choice. Mm-hmm. And that's how, like, if you can market a perception of size or maturity, that will give people confidence. So that's what we used to do in the early stages. Now we have those case studies. We have the big marquee client brands that we can shout about. So we don't need to do that anymore, but we still compete against. So there's about 30 of us in the agency. There'll be like just shy of 40, probably the end of this year. Like so we've got growth. We're a decent sized agency now. Like it's not a small kind of shop anymore. But we're competing against agencies who have 80, 100, 120. Like there are bigger agencies, but size doesn't mean that you deliver better work. And if you speak to a lot of people, typically when they work with a bigger agency, if you work with like one of the big brand name agencies, like the ones that come to mind, I won't name them, but typically what they'll do is they'll wheel out senior team members for the pitch, and then they'll deliver with juniors, and you're paying for the brand than you are necessarily the work that's being delivered. But that's an entirely side story. But with your question around like founder and title, I've always associated founder with like tech startup. Like that's how, in my mind's eye, that's how I perceive it. Yes, I founded a company, but I don't think founder is necessarily how I would position like the journey that I've gone through. I started a business, and then I started, like, I've never had the CEO title. Okay. It's the managing director title that I've always sat with within right. Six and Flow. Yeah. And how part of that is because of size, because in the UK, I think for a UK business to justify having a CEO, I think you either have to be trading overseas and trading with America, because then CEO makes more sense,
yeah,
or you have to be a certain size, and we're just not at that size.
Yeah.
We do trade with America, and the, like, for British business, the way that I see it is that you will typically have like an MD is more inward focused, so like you're looking at the structure of the business, how you build the business internally, like all those kind of pieces.
Yeah.
CEO is more outward focused, so you can have both within the same business, but the CEO would be more outward focused. Now, you could argue that my role now is entirely outward focused. Like, I have some very talented people on the team, so our leadership team do a lot of like the actual like business stuff now. I'm just the eye candy at the top of the pyramid now.
You do that so well.
And like, and that is effectively my role, is that brand positioning, the culture, and like the direction of the business, but actually the running of the business is less and less about me now. And that's the difference I see. And I think we will make that transition where I will become CEO, and because we are trading more heavily in North America now. So it does make more sense for us.
Right. That's interesting. And it's interesting though as well, because like you speak about your role as an ambassador for the business and your vision for the business as well, when you started at the beginning. And you said that one of the key roles that you were doing was actually marketing for talent, in effect. You were looking to bring in the most talented people. And it's quite clear that that's paid off over the course of time, because you've already spoken about that transition. But when you compare that to how I initially spoke about it, it's sort of like it does feel like you were more inwardly focused. You were focused on sort of marketing yourself to talent rather than customers necessarily.
Yeah.
So did you find that the way you built your business, that you were, that was a conscious thing, that, you know, the customers will come and they would be the right fit because you found the right talent rather than the other way around?
So my view on business in general is that like clients will come and go. Like, it's a sad fact of life, is that you will win a client and hopefully you will have that relationship for multiple years, but eventually they will probably go, or like it's the exception rather than the rule. Eventually, like, we have some great client relationships, multi-year relationships, that, and that's great. But like, there is a level of kind of coming and going with clients. The team, you put so much time, effort and resource into growing them and to developing them, making sure that they understand like the systems you use, how you like what is the culture and all of those things that go into them. They're huge investment. And for me, the team is way more important than the end customer. And that's the way that we position that. So don't get me wrong, if any of our clients are listening to this, it doesn't mean you're not important. But the way that we position that and that we justify that, and we have this discussion with clients, like, we're not hiding behind it, but we position ourselves as being a team first agency. And by that, I mean, if any agency ever says that they are client first, they are full of shit. Because agencies do not exist for like just to make the clients happy and just to put them first. They are businesses. They are businesses who have to make money to survive. Mm-hmm. And quite often the client's need will be at a juxtaposition with what the agency's needs are. So if you are truly clients first, then often that's not going to work. That relationship isn't going to work. Mm-hmm. So the way that we position it is that we go away, we find the right team. So we are clear with our values. We are clear with our culture. We have a recruitment process that is super long, but is designed to make sure that everybody is a good fit. And then with that, we have the right team who can deliver work to the standard that we know that we can and should. And then we find the clients to fit that team. So we have like a no dickhead policy for both team and clients. And like, we have to believe with clients. So we had a, we talk about it less now actually, but one of our mainstay points, and it was a big part of our marketing, not necessarily like the way that we would pitch ourselves to clients. It wouldn't be like an outward piece of marketing, but the way that we would market ourselves to clients would be, we have a three-prong approach to working with the clients. We have to believe that we can offer real value. We have to believe in your product and service, and you can't be a dickhead. Like, that was our, like, you had to pass that test before we would work with you. Right. So we've exited client relationships that weren't a good fit, or we weren't a good fit. So we don't feel like we can deliver what you need. So therefore, like, this isn't going to work for you. It's not going to work for us. And that's, it's part of, I think, that's a delivery thing, but it's also a marketing thing, because that all feeds back into that. Because if you balls up a client relationship, that can be one of the most detrimental things to your marketing, because you will then have a detractor in the market, and it will, one detractor, it takes 10 promoters. I was trying to figure the opposite to detractor then. It takes 10 promoters to negate what is happening from that detractor. So that's why you have to be super careful, but it all plays back into how that's being positioned in the marketing sphere. And I think that's one of the things that I've always tried to do is, and I think maybe sometimes too much, is how can I turn this into marketing? We did great work for that client. How can I turn it into marketing? We've just hired this great team member. How can I turn that to marketing? We have an incredible like ops team and focus in our recruitment process. How does that feed back into our marketing? Yeah. And also, and like you were touching on it before, is there's two strands to that marketing. It's client acquisition, team acquisition.
Yeah, I mean, that's fascinating, dude. You know, like, I feel like it's just going to turn into an interview, but, you know, I'm so interested in the way you've grown your business is really, really interesting. It seems like it's been super thoughtful and purposeful. It's a shame that you've got the don't be a dickhead rule, because I guess you had to move away from client work really, really quickly. Otherwise, you wouldn't be able to practice what you preach. But I guess...
So I had a panel interview a couple of years back with the IOD Director of the Year Award. So we'd already like done a submission for it. So like, here's our numbers, here's the goals, and kind of like went through all that spiel of like, here is how we position ourselves being team first. And they got me up on the panel interview and were like, okay, so here's your numbers. A, we don't think you can achieve those numbers in this time frame. And like, to me, that's like red flag to a bull. Because as soon as somebody tells me no, I'm like, I fucking will. And we did. But I also called him out. I was like, look, I'll tell you what, if I hit those numbers, you have to buy me dinner. So like, that was part of it. But then they also said, the question they said to me was, okay, you talk about being team first and you have this no dickhead policy. And I was like, yep, that's right. And they were like, so what happens when... you've said no to all these clients that have been dickheads and you run out of clients and you you've got nobody to work with anymore? And I was like, well, obviously at that point I'll reevaluate my fucking stance on this, because I'd rather work with dickheads than have to fire my team. However, I'm going to fight the good fight until that actually becomes an issue. Like, thankfully we've never had to. I think in our entire existence we've maybe had to end relationships with maybe 4 clients on that basis, maybe 5. And they were just either toxic relationships, or we just didn't feel like we could add the value that they needed. And it works for both sides, that if you've got an open and honest relationship, and you've got like team members who you trust to be able to spot those things. So if a team member comes to me and is like, Rich, I don't feel like we can deliver on this, I take that super seriously. Like, there's some decisions that we have to like dig into more. You have to be aware that actually maybe it's a personal thing, maybe we have to move this around with the teams, but actually it's pretty clear when you've spent all that time, found the right people, if they're saying that there's a problem, there is going to be a problem.
I think there's something there as well, which is, you know, that interview question, what happens when, you know, you've found, or you decided to work with every dickhead and you decided to say no. You know, there's a bunch of really, really lovely people out there that when you find the right fit, you know, the relationship sings. And I think it's ridiculous to me that I don't think any one company in the entire world, even if it's Apple or Google, they haven't captured the entire market. You know, there's enough business out there for all types of companies to deal with all types of people at any stage of the business in whatever it may be. people, this is also one of the gripes that I have about sort of like content marketing and stuff like that, is that folks are like, oh, I don't want to give away my secrets in case people copy. It's not the same thing, because people have got different target markets, different executions, different personalities, different personnel, you know, and within all of these, there's opportunities. There is enough business out there. And if you've taken the time to define your target market in the way that you have, whether that's based on industry, whether that's based on personality traits, then there's enough of that business out there to grow a very, very sizable business, and not have to worry about working with the people you don't want to. I think there's people forget. I'll give you an example. The other day I was on a call the other day. It was a training workshop, and it was a cohort of about 80 people on the call or something like that. And I felt like an alien, because I was the only person there who wasn't bothered about getting a ton of funding to grow my business. You know, I wanted to grow my business to support a lifestyle that makes my wife and I happy, that means that we can help people. You know, it's not bonkers things, but it was not money for money's sake. I think there was just a really odd thing where, you know, we had this ambition to grow the business.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
For that reason, and everyone else was just all about funding, and so I think there's lots of ways and means of doing these things, but people do need to remember that you're not just doing it for the money. A lot of the time, you're also doing it for good reasons.
It's almost like different people have different levels of self qualification, as in, like, what are your qualifiers for success, like personal success? And so many people out there, like, and typically people with the title founder. Because they want to be seen as that person that started something. And I absolutely want to be seen as somebody who started the agency. It's one of my drivers. But yeah. I think there's a lot of people out there who are going, all right, my qualification for success here is that I've managed to, like, bring in a bunch of money and investment. And because somebody's invested in me, I've ticked the box. I'm in the $100 million investment club. But actually, you're going to walk away with, like, fuck all of your company at the end of it.
Yeah, for sure.
And that's the difference. And what's his name? Rand Fishkin in his Lost and Founder book talks about it, where he was like, if you've got somebody who owns 100% of their, like, $20 million company, and you've got somebody who owns 5% of their $100 million company, like, think about this. Like, it's those kind of things that, but it comes down to, like, what are your drivers? And this is actually, so I wrote a pretty deep and very long email newsletter this week, to the point that my wife was even like, wow, that was pretty deep. And I'm not a kind of a deep person. What you see is what you get, and most of it's on the surface. Yeah, thanks, Joe. But like, it was all about, like, why? Like, what is your why? What is the thing that drives you? And I think that it plays back into the marketing stuff again, because particularly in our early days, our why, I wanted to create an agency that if I didn't own it, I'd want to work for it. That was my why. That was what I wanted to create. And I, like, hung my hat on it. It was my flag in the sand. Yeah. And that's what we were aiming for. And I kind of, like, that was heart on the sleeve stuff. Like, here's the story of why I got to that point and blah, 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 blah. And over time, that's changed. And I've really, really struggled more recently how do I articulate my way? Like, what is my why? Like, I'm saying why a lot, but like, why am I doing what I'm doing? What's the mission there? And I had a great interview with Gauri Yahar, who is the MD of Upskill Digital, who basically, like, they help people upskill on like tech tools and things like that to help them make them more employable and that kind of stuff. And his mission is to help people from marginalized groups to like upskill and become more employable, help break glass ceilings, stuff like that. And it's great. And I was listening to him, I was like, fuck, you are way cooler than I am. and I was like, but what is my why? And then I got onto a Clubhouse with Dave Gerhardt on Friday night. And I was like, do you know what? Like, everybody's asking me all these, like, oh, how do I look at ROI? Should I rebrand this and shit like that? And I was like, oh, fuck it. I was like, Dave, what's your why? Why do you do all this shit? You've got like a job, a podcast, your group. Why are you doing it? And he was like, and I was like, you could see it was like a change of pace because I'd all of a sudden gone deep. And he was like, well, like, he was like, obviously I want my family to be provided for and have a great life and stuff like that. And he was like, but I actually really enjoy the process. And like what I'm doing. And I was like, I'm fucking so glad somebody said that, because I beat myself up, because the reason I, like, my why, like, I, the reason I struggle to articulate it is because my why is basically I'm super competitive. Like, that interview I had with the IOD, like, I ended up getting the award, but like that interview, like, fuck the award, I couldn't care less about it. Like, now it's made no difference to my career or the growth of the business. But what that interview, it put a fire under my ass, because I was like, I am gonna fucking beat you. Like, watch me now. It's probably that one panel interview, it was one of the biggest driving forces I've ever had behind the business. There's been a few of those like over the years, but that was the first. Yeah. So like, one of them is I'm competitive. The other is like, I just like building shit. Like, I like creating, I like tinkering, I like doing it. So I enjoy the process. But then I started to dig down into it a little bit more, and I was like, actually, I really like the part of that building is I like seeing people grow. I like being part of somebody's growth journey. I would love it if, like, in 10, 20 years, people look back and go, I actually, Rich, like, helped in some small way, like that small piece of my career, whatever. Like, I'd love that to be part of the story. And I think that's the driver. So now when I think about it, like, my drivers are, it's a split. I enjoy the process. And as soon as, but the problem with that, though, is as soon as I stop enjoying the process, I'll stop wanting to do it.
But
the overarching piece is that actually I like building, I like seeing growth, and I like the people element of that. So I've got like an overarching mission, but I enjoy the process along the way. And that's starting to feed back into our marketing, because I've now realized that my why doesn't have to be the same as our business why. Like, it doesn't, they have to align. They have to, my why has to support the business why, because otherwise I'm pointing in the wrong direction, but I'm meant to be leading the company. It just doesn't work. Yeah. So now I've realized that actually my why can be divergent to the business, or like running in parallel, but it doesn't have to be the same thing. And that you can see is starting to come through in the marketing, because now actually, and it's stupid because we're a team first agency, and I've only just, it, like, it was literally as I was writing my newsletter over the weekend, it dawned on me, and I was like, there's now like 30 people in the agency. Our why is much bigger than me. Like, it is, I can feed into it, I can support it, but like, we exist for something that is out of my hands now. And that's, do you know what? It's a couple of years ago that was scared the shit out of me. I'd be like, no, I'm losing control. But now I'm like, it's cool, because I planted the seed, watered it for a bit, and now, like, watching it grow. Do you like the gardening analogy there? Fuck, I am middle age.
That's great, though. That's so, so interesting. You know, if I was to relate my own experience, then I think with the marketing meetup, then I've always had, it kind of feels like the marketing meetup is a vehicle for my personal why. So to think that it kind of sits separate is actually is really lovely to hear. And I think it probably also helps in that process of separating your life from your business to a certain extent, because I think one of the things that I've struggled with over the past 18 months or so is that my mood is representative on how the marketing meetup has done that day. You know, and if we get loads of signups, then I'm feeling great. If the webinar goes great, you know, I'm like, yeah, you know. And then if, you know, I have a bad conversation at work or whatever, of course, you know, I'm going to take it personally, because you know, people do. But I take it that extra level personal because it's also representative of the marketing year. So that's really, really fascinating, mate. Thank you for sharing that.
You're welcome, Joe. You're welcome. You know, the other really interesting thing that Gori said on the LinkedIn Live on Friday was that, like, we were talking about that, like, that balance between work and home life. And he's just had a baby as well. And we were, like, kind of just talking around that. And he was saying, he was like, we're entrepreneurs. Like, we started a business. We spotted a gap in the market. We've started businesses. He's like, you never truly detach. Like, you will always be thinking, like, you will be sitting on the couch with your lovely wife, you'll be watching something, and there will be something in the back of your mind being like, oh, fuck yeah, I should really do that with that email template. Or what if I try this with my lovely introduction where I make people feel warm and fuzzy? Like, there is something always ticking away. You cannot turn that off. Like, and if you can turn that off, then you are far wiser and smarter than me, and I question whether or not you are truly into it. But like the point with that is, and I said this to him, I was like, where I am now is that I can never switch that shit off, always thinking, always. And it is a drain, and like, not a drain as in it, there is an energy level that gets sapped out. And like, family, unfortunately, pay the price for that, because sometimes you're not entirely present. You might be physically present, but not mentally present. And I that is me, like, through and through a lot, unfortunately. However, what I am better at now is I can switch off the day-to-day, like, trudgery shit. Like, basically, and I said to Gori, I was like, I can basically turn off the bits I don't like. But, like, I'm still thinking about, okay, we want to grow into this. So, like, last week, I was working on all of our growth plans and targets for the next 5 years and trying to map out what that looks like in a sales team. And I find that super interesting because I'm like, yeah, but if we do this bit, or if we change this metric and, like, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But what I don't like doing is basically anything involves like finance or invoicing or like all that. So I can not think about that. And I've got people in the team who are like way better than us. And that's how I feel like my role. So coming back to the overarching question, that's like the balance between like, and journey between founder and like marketer and where that sits. I think I started as a marketer, right? So I was marketing the business. I was all about the marketing. I had to do some admin shit in the background, but I was marketing for clients and for the agency. And then it became, fuck, I'm now running a business. And now I'm like, I'm doing all these bits. Like, I'm like, we're building cultures, we're building processes. And like, I am not a process person, and it is very like, I can do it, but it takes a lot of energy. And so now we have people that are doing all those bits and pieces and blah, 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 blah. But now I think that journey has progressed from like market at the beginning, endy in the middle. And now I feel like I'm kind of stepping back into the marketing piece. So like, which is like, I feel like I'm not full circle, but now I feel like I've done that bit in the middle, and where I can add most value back into the company is by focusing on the marketing piece. Now we have a great marketer, Khadija, who is focusing on our marketing. Like, that's her job. She markets us now. And that's one of those step changes in the agency. Like, one of them is like bringing in a dedicated salesperson, bringing in a dedicated like ops person, bringing in a dedicated marketing. Like, all of those things make a change in the agency and like the growth trajectory. And now that we've got her in role there, I can focus on other pieces of the marketing. So like, you and I spend a lot of time doing the podcast, like we're doing LinkedIn Lives, we've got webinars and running newsletters, like that kind of stuff, and focusing on client relationships and like strategic clients, that stuff. And that's where I can add the most value now. So I feel like, to answer this question, I feel like I've almost gone like marketing MD, marketing quasi strategist. I have no idea what I do anymore.
It almost sounds like an ambassador, really. You know, you're the ambassador for Six and Flow in a way.
Jesus, that sounds even more twatty than founder.
Yeah. Well, you won't put it on your LinkedIn, but in terms of a description of the role, then you know you're ambassador. You're not necessarily doing the thing. You're speaking about the thing. You're dropping in on the strategy stuff, but you're not you know, you're not in drift, you know, configuring stuff except for your own interest, you know, that you have, because you're naturally curious about this sort of stuff. But it's not your job to do that necessarily.
It's not my job to do that, but I'm constantly building and tweaking. It must drive the team nuts because they're like, oh, fuck, he's changed something again.
I tell you what, though, to that experience, then I've quite recently had a couple of conversations, one with a dev and another with an SEO, where I fully feel, you know, like how everyone kind of thinks their boss is a bit of an idiot. Like, I can feel that sort of vibe coming, you know, when you've got a little bit of knowledge to be dangerous, but like, not
the worst kind of client. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. And like, I can feel myself asking those questions where I would be rolling my eyes internally. And I imagine that the rest of the team probably does hate us, you know, in a way, but in another way I'm sure they're grateful, potentially, hopefully. I don't know, maybe that is the time that you sort of start bringing in specialists, though, and saying, rather than saying tell me about this thing, it's go and do this thing, you know, because I need your help.
The ideal position is to get to the point where you go, like, here is what I want us to achieve.
Yeah,
go and do what you can to get us to that point. Like, if you want support, I'll support you, but like, my ideal now is for me to go, here's where I want us to get to. Go away and like figure out how we're going to get there and do it.
Yeah. And that's trust, and that's the team, and you know, it's everything, the culture that you've built up over the years. It's all coming into play at the same time, isn't it? That, you know, you've created this thing, and that's the place where people can operate within that system, and then they can go and do those things. And I guess I've always had a bit of a discomfort in also saying go and do this thing, you know, because it feels like directive. But I guess, you know, as long as there's a why behind it, you know, which is, we're trying to achieve this thing, how do you think you can fit into it and deliver on this, then I guess that's probably the way you put it, is it?
But you're not really being directive, though, if you're saying like, here's where we want to get to, and here is, like, you're not telling them how to do it, you're not dictating that piece, you're just saying, like, here's where I want us to end up. You figure out the journey to get there.
Yeah.
And that's empowering, particularly in a marketing context, because, like, yes, I've got marketing ideas. Some of them are questionable, but like, it's like, I can feed into that stuff, but I am just one person in a team of 30 odd. And like, my ideas will only ever appeal to like my background or the way that I market and the people who would be receptive to the way that I market. Now, and this comes back to that whole thing. I'm obsessed with us building a cognitively diverse team, because then we will actually deliver great work that appeals to people who aren't me. And that's where we need to get to. That's across the board: ethnicity, age, gender, education, all of these things come into that diversity, and that's what we need to build out.
Spot on. I love it, mate. I'm probably going to be running out of time, so like, but you know, like, I know that, so thank you for sharing, but genuinely, like, I feel enriched for that, because, you know, I'm on the journey. I'll probably say that I know that you've only been sort of running Six and Flow, it's like 5 years this year, is it?
Be 6 years this year, actually.
Yes, so you've only been running it a year longer than I've been doing the marketing yet, but I think you're a lot further on that journey than I am. So, you know, I think there's been an awful lot there, which should help me along my own journey as well. So,
but we're only further along because we started in a different path, because you didn't start to create a business. It became a business. It was a labor of love that turned into a business because you saw there was an opportunity there. So, you've built something, you've actually built your business quicker than I have, if you take it from the point that you pivoted into it being a business. So there you go, mate. There's a bit of an ego rub.
Throw a double bone.
But now that's also pissed me off, because I'm like, that motherfucker is growing his business faster than I am.
I don't know. I don't.
I will destroy you.
This is just like your attempt at bringing me down, isn't it?
Yeah.
Get me embroiled in some controversy. I love it. Well, I appreciate that. And like, you know, before, to give a backstage view to the folks listening, then usually we write down some talking points for each session, just so we've got an idea of where we're going with things. But through that conversation, then we kind of just tick them all off as we've gone. So that's that's really nice. So good sesh, mate.
So so Joe and I are going to take a couple weeks off, I think. So we the next couple of weeks we are going to like pick a couple of our favourites episodes. Although Joe, I have no idea which ones they are. I totally forget about after we've had our conversations. But anyway, we're going to pick out a couple of our favourites and put them up as replays, and then we're going to come back with our third season. Seasons in, Joe.
Mad, nice. It's good effort. It'll be nice to know if anyone's got any favourite episodes that we can put out again. Although, so yeah, drop Rich a message. Because that's what everyone does. Nobody messages me.
Your mum messages me. See ya.
So yeah, thanks very much, and thank you for listening. Do drop us a review. Rich's supposed t-shirts are on the way, so
they're fucking coming, I swear to God. I did have a little argument with the people that were supplying them, but it's coming.
Really? That's hilarious. But I'm looking forward to seeing them too. It's a big mystery to me.
So, it's just on the back, they just say Joe's a dick.
Yeah. Lads on tour. Yeah. I love it. Dino. Just on the back. That was Dino. Anyway, thank you for listening. And I appreciate that, mate. And good catching up. And yeah, we'll listen soon.
See you in season 3.
Bye.